young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 2 to 3 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with a community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Yesenia.
And Rowan.
I attend Laytonville High School. Rowan attends the University of California, Santa Barbara. Today our topic is the Amethyst Initiative, a proposal written and signed by over 100 college students. Their statement says that the 21-year-old drinking age is not working, and specifically that it has created a culture of dangerous binge drinking on their campuses. They feel that lowering the drinking age to 18 will reduce the popularity of youth binge drinking. Do you remember the first taste of alcohol? How old were you? 21. All 50 states currently demand that their citizens reach age 21 before they can legally drink. But there's a growing movement that says mandatory minimum laws may do more harm than good. When determining the right date when a young person can take one of their final steps towards personal responsibility and freedom, what's the right answer? In terms of both its laws and its culture surrounding alcohol, the United States is an anomaly. Only Indonesia, Mongolia, and Palau have drinking ages as high as 21. All the rest of the world has a drinking age as this that is either lower or non-existent. In virtually all other cultures, alcohol and its use is the difference between youth and adulthood. The authors of the initiative says that by separating the legal drinking age and the legal age of adulthood, the United States perpetuates a culture of intoxication and excess. The 21-year-old drinking age has successfully banished underage alcohol consumption from public view in public places, but there is no disputing the reality that alcohol consumption continues, often with life-threatening consequences, and clandestine, remote settings away from supervision by parents, residents, life staff, and other adult authority figures, and usually beyond the effective reach of law enforcement. Proclaiming a campus or a household dry may seem a very virtuous act, but too often such pronouncements simply uproot the transplant, the practice, and as a result, worsen the problem and heighten the risk. Drinking is not out in the open, and drinking that requires one to find a dark corner or travel to a remote location is drinking that puts not only the drinker, but also the innocent citizen at greater risk. The drinking age is a lone exception to the legal age of adulthood. In the U.S., the 26th Amendment to the Constitution, ratified in 1971, states explicitly that the right of a citizen age 18 to vote shall not be abridged on account of age. In the wake of the setting of the voting age, many states reconsider the age of majority, and within little more than a decade, 18 had replaced 21 as the age of which one crossed the threshold of adulthood. In 2008, an 18-year-old may vote, sign a contract, serve on a jury, and be subject to the draft, but may not drink. Those opposed to lowering the drinking age point out of that when 29 states lowered the drinking ages in the 1970s. There was such an increase in alcohol traffic fatalities and injuries that by 1983, 16 states had voluntarily raised their drinking age back to 21. This brought about an immediate reduction in drinking and driving traffic fatalities. Those opposed also say that a person's brain does not stop developing until his or her early mid-20s. Alcohol can seriously damage long- and short-term growth processes. Frontal lobe development and the refinement of pathways and connections continue into the mid-20s. Damage from alcohol in this time can be long-term and irreversible. The National Highway Traffic Safety Association estimates nearly 25,000 teen traffic deaths have been prevented by age 21 laws. In 2003, the Center for Disease Control examined 49 peer-reviewed studies on the effect of changing the minimum drinking age law. Almost every study found that increasing the minimum drinking age to 21 saved lives, with an average decrease in traffic fatalities of 16%. The studies also showed that lowering the minimum drinking age to 18 or 19 caused an average increase in crashes by 8 to 10%. Recent research published by the World Health Organization found that while 15 and 16-year-old teens in many Europe states where the drinking age is 18 or younger have more drinking occasions per month, they have fewer dangerous intoxication occasions than their American counterparts. For example, in Southern Europe countries, ratios of all drinking occasions to intoxication occasions were quite low, roughly 1 in 10, while in the United States, almost half of all drinking occasions involving 15 to 16-year-olds result in intoxication. 90% of the alcohol consumed by 18 to 20-year-olds is consumed when the individual is engaged in an episode of heavy drinking. During these episodes, of which intoxication is the goal, a large quantity of alcohol is consumed in a short period of time, whether through taking shots or hard liquor or playing drinking games, especially when understood in terms of the effect of large quantities of alcohol on the development brain. These are alarming statistics, of which tragedy and loss of life are often the result. Over 1,000 lives per year are lost to alcohol off the highways, a figure that has been increasing over the past decade. Alcohol poisoning, in which an individual literally drinks him or herself to death, has become increasingly prevalent amongst young people. The number of alcohol poisoning deaths amongst 18 to 23-year-olds per year showed a steady increase between 1999 and 2007. Of those deaths, 53% were of individuals under the age of 21. These indicators hardly show that the 21-year-old drinking age and the current approach to educating young people about responsible alcohol use has been the intention effect of reducing the misuse of alcohol among adolescents and young adults. Today, we are going to discuss the Amethyst Initiative and the ongoing national debate on lowering the drinking age from 21 to 18. We will present facts, figures, and opinions from a variety of sources. Please join in during the call-in portion of the show in about 15 minutes and share your insights and experiences about youth and drinking. We are at the Willett Studio, and our phone number is 456-9991. We'll mention the number again when we open up the phone lines. Let's begin by talking about how much alcohol we see consumed by underage people in this area and the result of these actions. Rowan, did you witness much drinking when you were at Willits High School?
I wouldn't say I witnessed a lot of it, but I'd say that it was a part of high school, and it's a part of every high school. Growing up, there's a time in someone's life when they try to grow up. And one of the ways they can do this is to drink alcohol, because it's illegal if you're under 21, and it is kind of the last step before a true adulthood. Engaging in drinking it at an early age is a way of crossing a threshold, and it's a rite of passage. But I'd say, from my experience, people start drinking before 21, regardless of where they're from, and I think it's time to accept, at least at some point or at some level, that outlawing drinking until 21 doesn't actually stop drinking under 21.
So what age does alcohol experimentation begin?
For some people, it begins, I think, as early as 13 or 14, and for others, maybe 17 or 18. I think it depends on the person and their personality, and whether they grew up around alcohol or it's available to them, or whether their set of friends enjoys drinking alcohol or considers it maybe not something they do.
So what do you think happens when youth gets drunk?
When youth get drunk, they get loud. Sometimes fights happen. Sometimes dangerous things happen, like drinking and driving, and maybe overdosing on alcohol, and you could say that unplanned sex or unprotected sex is also a side effect of underage drinking and drinking in general, not just underage drinking.
Hmm.
I mean, pretty much the same thing that happens to people that are over 21 when they drink happens to people when they drink, of all ages.
So how widespread is drinking in high school?
I really wouldn't know. I could offer my own experiences. But I don't know how that would have matched to an actual ideal sample of high school students or those high school students and maybe even Ukiah or Laytonville, which I don't know about. What I do know is that nobody actually does know how many people drink at high school because the surveys that people take, people don't take them seriously. I remember in high school, maybe sophomore year, there was a California statewide survey that asked us all kinds of questions about whether we'd had sex in the last 10 days, 8 weeks, 6 months, etc., whether we drank in or used drugs of any sort. And it was a fairly in-depth survey. It took about an hour, and maybe about half the population of the class of 30 that I was in took it seriously, and the other half didn't. And that's just offering a sample of the information that the educators and lawmakers get. It comes from classrooms where people don't really care, and youth aren't really willing to talk about their experiences with alcohol because it is illegal and it's not something that they want to disclose to the whole world. So I don't think there is any real accurate information available about that.
Do you think that most youth people, like students in both high school and middle school, drink because of peer pressure? And like, how much do you assume there is?
I think a peer pressure is kind of a misused term. People drink because there's an allure to it. It's illegal. It's out of reach. It makes them seem older than they are. And I'd say that it's not so much peer pressure as but wanting to buy into that image and the image that they see in alcohol advertisements, which aren't, you know, they don't start advertising to people when they turn 21. They start advertising to people when they can watch TV and they start watching channels that don't advertise breakfast cereals anymore. So I think the effects of it, that alcohol advertising has on legal drinkers is also affects underage drinkers, and I think they drink for the same reasons, you know, for the inhibitions and the social lubricant and whatever else. I think there's definitely negative reasons why people drink. I think there are alcoholics at a young age, but mostly they're just buying into the hype that advertising creates.
Also, one thing that I've noticed that most people drink when they're in a powerful situation, like
a social situation.
Yeah, like when, say, a guy broke up or the girlfriend broke up with their boyfriend cheated on or something. It's like they sometimes go and drink because they think that it will make them feel better. Or sometimes they drink because they just want to fit in with the group that they're hanging out with.
Kids drink for the same reason that adults drink. If they've had a powerful emotional event happen to them, I could see it being a reason to turn to alcohol as a release. I think that's where the minimum drinking age fits in. Is when you're under 21, it takes a little bit more time to obtain alcohol, so you can't rush out and buy a bottle like if you're over 21. But if you want it, it's still there. And in terms of a social thing, partying in high school and college usually does revolve around alcohol and the consumption of alcohol, and there's not really a way to get around that.
So how hard is it to get alcohol, like, nowadays?
Nowadays?
I think it's pretty easy.
It is pretty easy, and the smaller the town you live in, the easier it is, because you know more people, and you know people of a different age range, and once you know people that can buy alcohol for you, they'll buy alcohol for you. Some stores sell to minors. It's not impossible to get alcohol if you're under 21. It's more difficult than walking into a store and getting some, but in some cases, you know, it's easier for somebody to steal alcohol than to do anything else. So it is easy as walking in and getting it. It's still there. It's still on the store shelves. It's still in mom and dad's cabinet. It's not unavailable.
No, you actually made a point. Some of the youth usually get the alcohol from, like, older friends or even siblings. And even at home, like, it's, like, right there. So it's easier for them to take it, like, sneak it away from their parents and drink it Or even one of the things that I've noticed that even parents drink with their own, like, teens and just accept that fact that they're drinking.
There are some parents that accept their kids drink and choose to drink with them or provide a safe environment for them to drink in, where they and their friends don't have to drive or don't have to go to a cul-de-sac or a cutout in the woods or whatever and drink there and then have to drive back with probably somebody intoxicated at the wheel.
One of the things that they were asking is that maybe if there were stronger law enforcement, maybe that would help. But I don't think that it would, in a way, because maybe they would think twice of how drunk they were going to get or when to carry beers with them or, like, vodka and stuff. But I think that once you start drinking, maybe once you make that choice, like, you can stop drinking or just continue on.
My personal experience with law enforcement was, I was actually arrested for being, drunk in public, for being, too intoxicated to be in public, while I was at a student last year at, UC Santa Barbara. I was arrested in Isla Vista partying, during a weekend, and, I spent the night in jail in the drunk tank, and I had to go to court afterwards, and I lost my license for a year. And it was a horrible experience. It was expensive. It was kind of demeaning, and there was a huge loss of privilege with losing my license. But it kind of shook home the effects of drinking a lot and partying heavily, and that you do have a loss of judgment and you can make bad decisions, and it's affected how I do consume alcohol and how I plan to consume alcohol in the future, which is keep it in moderation. And so I think law enforcement does help. It does help keep people safe. It keeps people in check. But the other thing I learned from my experiences in Santa Barbara is that if you over-enforce, it just results in a higher number of arrests. It doesn't result in a lower number of people drinking.
Do you think that the harsh law enforcement actually helped you? And would you recommend others listening and trying to control their temptations of, like, drinking a lot?
Do I think law enforcement is good?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it was good. I don't think it worked. The laws that I was prosecuted under were overturned months after I had my conviction. So I was still under the effect of them, but there was, people had observed that that experiment to prosecute as harshly as possible didn't work. And I think it doesn't work. I think once people have made the conscious decision to drink, I think they're going to do it regardless. I think you can prevent people from drinking and driving. I support higher punishments for drinking and driving. I support DUI checkpoints. I think drunk drivers should be kept off the road. Driving is a skill. Drinking is a skill. Drinking safely is a skill, and they don't mix. So I think law enforcement has helped keep people from driving drunk. I know higher punishments have made older people that I know. I think it's made them stop drinking and driving as much, especially as people get their second DUI and it starts becoming really real that they can spend lots of time in jail. I think it changes people's behavior. But I think persecuting people for drinking at a young age, I think that doesn't help.
One of the things that I've noticed is that many, like, law enforcement say they don't want youth to drink, like 18 and younger. Like, they don't want them to literally drink. That's what they're kind of trying to say.
Oh, it's what they say. No, it's what they say.
Yeah. And it's like, if they don't want them to drink, then maybe they should, like, make harsher, not even only on the people who buy it, but on the stores and companies that actually make the alcohol, like, make harsher judgments on them too.
Stores are actually really impacted. If they do sell to minors, stores lose their liquor license. The Rite Aid in Goleta, where I went to school, it shut down after it lost its liquor license because it sold to underage kids. If you're a gas station and whatnot and you sell to kids and you get popped, it can mean your livelihood.
Yeah. And then even many stores, like, don't listen to the law and they even sell alcohol to younger kids because they want to make money.
Yeah, and that also depends on how harsh the enforcement is and what the climate is for the law enforcement in that community. It changes. It varies.
Can you be educated into not binge drinking?
You can. It takes experience, I think, more than anything. It
takes time.
It takes time. I think educational programs help. As an incoming freshman at UC Santa Barbara, one of the first things we had to do was complete about a 2 to 3 hour online course about the effects of alcohol on our bodies and on our developing minds and about binge drinking. And I think education helps. I think education in high school, it prepares you for it. But alcohol is a thing that by experiencing you learn.
Mm-hmm. Does alcohol being illegal make it more attractive to youth?
Yeah, making anything illegal makes it attractive in some way, I think. And especially that it's illegal not until you're 18, but until you're 21. So it makes it alluring. It makes it, like a goal. People's 21st birthdays are usually, the one that they celebrate the hardest on.
Do you think, does the advertisement also, should they be blamed for?
Maybe not blamed. I think advertising is just a product of our economy and our society. But I think it can be blamed for causing so much of the hype around alcohol that causes binge drinking, to pair alcohol with the visual images of sex and fun and, Bud Light beer, bikinis, Super Bowl commercials, whatever, everything American and enjoyable that's paired into alcohol advertisements does make it seem really good. It's attractive. It's made to be attractive. It's a product that's packaged up and sold that way. And the companies know this. They make sweet alcoholic drinks that taste like soda. Smirnoff Ice, for example, that I don't think anybody but high school students drink. If you want to blame somebody, blame companies. I don't know.
But, I think a person.
The consumers are there. They want the product.
I think if anyone, want to blame somebody, I think it should be the person who's actually consuming it.
Yeah.
Because they have the choice whether they want to drink it or not. And if they prefer to save their own life and save another person's life and not drink and drive, then that is based on their choice and the amount that they're drinking. I mean, if they want to drink, go ahead. But you should think wisely before, you consume, your third beer or something. It's like
You mean drinking to intoxication versus just drinking?
Yeah, like you have to think wisely instead of just saying, "Oh, I'm going to drink."
The problem with drinking is that once you start, it gets harder to stop, and I think that's where education would come and help people would be to teach them about limits and how to learn how to limit their drinking. But the way it is now is when you're underage and you can drink alcohol, the tendency is to drink as much as possible in the shortest possible time and to get as drunk as possible. And I think that's a direct result of the illegality of the act.
I was reading something from the internet, something by Donald Ewart and Andrew W. Deckert, and they said, "We all pay a price when youths drink. For example, 45% of people who die in crashes involving a drinking driver under 21 are people other than the young driver. Alcohol-related crashes cost each U.S. household more than $165 a year in higher insurance premiums." So it's. Do you think that maybe drunk drivers also cost the U.S. a lot of money?
Drunk people cost money. I don't really know where to go with that. It's drunk driving's bad, but I don't think the argument should be about drunk driving. I think it's about whether when somebody's 18, if they're responsible enough to consume alcohol. And I think that by the time people are 18, they are. When I've talked to law enforcement, I worked as a videographer for a high school project called oh, it was every 15 minutes, and it was a California state-sponsored, it was a CHP thing about not drunk driving, and I drove around with a CHP or a sheriff's officer, probably both of them, but I remember talking to the sheriff's officer about what he thought about the 21 drinking age versus the 18, and his view was that at 18, people aren't mature enough to handle alcohol. But when I questioned him about his own use, he shied away from the topic. But he had drank it at an early age, and I think the whole keep it 21 is a really conservative, hypocritical thing, and I think it's a way of differentiating our nationality from everybody else. America is known throughout the world for our stupid drinking laws, and I say this because whenever I talk to foreign exchange students, not just at my university but at others, they always just come and then and they just laugh at us because of our fascination with alcohol, because of the taboo that we place around it. And with other things, specifically sex and the rating systems in movies and whatnot, by placing these taboos around things, we make them really attractive, and we usually force ourselves into a culture of excess.
Have you ever heard that maybe like drinking can express like adulthood? Like, do you think that's like a fact?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It definitely doesn't make you an adult, but it makes you feel like an adult to some point. It's something that, the older people do, and it's a rite of passage into adulthood, and especially turning 21 in this culture is a big step, and it really separates you into like a different class of person socially. Like, there's the people that can go into the bars and the people that can't go into the bars.
Like, there are some teenagers who actually want to have the opportunity to taste alcohol and like try it. Do you think if like talk to their parents and have a very strong communication with their parents, do you think parents should have like safe parties for youth to experiment with alcohol?
From the research I did, when teens are used to drinking alcohol at an early age, there's a higher likelihood of alcoholism at a later date. When kids are introduced to alcohol in a family setting, such as a glass of wine or half a beer at dinner, or diluted amounts of alcohol at holidays, or just small ways so that you can so that kids can learn about the effects of alcohol and the buzz it gives you and the feeling it gets while being in a safe, comfortable setting. I think that's kind of important, and I think that safe parties where there's no drunk driving are important. But ideally, kids shouldn't be drinking. Alcohol isn't good for anybody. It's a toxin. It's a poison. And when you drink it, you're making a choice to poison yourself. And I think that that choice is something that we can be serious about granting to people. I think instead of just legislating that if you're over 18, then that you're too immature to make this choice, we feel, so we're going to just block you from having it. I think that the morals behind it are maybe right, that that people should be kept away from it. But once that choice is made, whether in the light of the law or not, young people are going to be able to obtain alcohol and drink as much of it as they want.
How do you think life would be without any alcohol? Like, alcohol eliminated, like,
gone? That's like asking if there was, like, a world without money. Alcohol would just be replaced by some other substance. Since as far back as recorded history can go, there's always been some sort of toxin that people introduce into their bodies to alleviate the stresses of living, and alcohol is the one that happens to be licensed and sold legally in the U.S. People would find something else to do. People would smoke more marijuana or do more cocaine, or something else, or find a new drug. I think alcohol isn't the problem. It's life that's the problem, and people are just looking for an escape from it.
Yeah. Do you think that lowering the age limit to 18 would result in more high school drinking?
Yes. That's something that you can't argue around. If the age was lower, more young people would drink. There'd be a spike in arrests, in fatalities, in
accidents.
Auto accidents. Until people got acclimated to the changes. And I think it's something they could consider before, if they ever do, or if they considered changing this law. But at the same time, for somebody that's underage, whether they're 19 or 16, it doesn't seem like it's much of a difference. I guess the whole buying argument I had thought up doesn't really make sense, because when you're 18, you can buy some for your buddy that's 16. It's probably going to happen. There'd be a spike. There'd be an unavoidable spike of bad things that would happen as an excess of alcohol, unless there was a lot of education at the same time, or if they rolled the date slowly back so that it'd go from 21 to 20, 19, or if there's some way, if they just changed it right now today, it would be mayhem. But I think if they implemented education and rolled it back slowly, I think it would be healthy.
I think they should, like, especially for teens, I think they should provide more alternatives and stuff, like more activities, like skateboarding parks and, like, I don't know, places where teenagers can go so that they won't think of any drug use or alcohol and stuff. Like, what do you think? What kind of alternatives does the community provide for us?
Oh, well, in Willits, pretty much, I've heard this this quote maybe 600 times. The only thing, then the quote is, the only thing to do in Willits is to go to the skate park or get the F word up. People, you know, there's not much to do in these communities. It's something that kids do if there's nothing else to do. And if there was other programs or other, I guess, recreational activities, there'd be less underage drinking. There'd be less underage binge drinking. But it's hard for the community to find something that's as fun as partying to replace it. So you'd have to be digging pretty deep in the community's pocketbooks to put in like an ice hockey rink or something. Mm-hmm. But it's important for the communities to just to consider other alternatives or to sponsor programs that give kids healthy alternatives to partying.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read a few of the college presidents that signed this Amethyst initiative, just to show a serious. President Rebecca S. Chopp from the Colgate University, President Robert Hoover of the College of Idaho, President James E. Wright from Dartmouth College, President Richard Broadhead from Duke University, President Joseph R. Fink of the Dominican University of California. There's more. This is a national community of education professionals. These are the people that are paid to know youth well. They're in charge of grooming the next generation of leaders and young people, young adults in our society. And I think it's important to listen to what they say. Personally, I've been lobbying for this kind of lower drinking age since I went to Europe and saw the cultures and was able to, you know, enjoy the freedoms of legally drinking alcohol. And I didn't know that there was such a national undercurrent that supported it. And this Amethyst initiative really took me by surprise. And I think it's just important to consider that when the initiative doesn't just ask for us to just roll back the drinking age to 18 immediately, it just calls for a debate on it. And I think it's important to just do that and take them seriously.
We're going to open up the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call and would especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about lowering the drinking age to 18. How old were you when you first consumed alcohol? Are you shocked to learn that many youth begin experimenting with alcohol in middle school or earlier? Do you think that if 18-year-olds could legally drink, that there would be less binge drinking? Would lowering the age limit increase the amount of high school drinking? If you have children, do you drink with them so that they can learn how to drink responsibly? What other ways could youth be taught to use alcohol responsibly? Would an alcohol-free society be an improvement? What do you think of college students calling for lowering the drinking age from 21 to 18? Please call and be part of this discussion. The phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be part of this discussion. We'd really like to hear from you. Caller, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wonder if you're aware of some of the European countries that have drinking laws that are considerably different than ours, where they will allow young people to start drinking at the age of 16 or somewhere around there, but they can't get a driver's license till they're 21. Have you heard about those?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually experienced that. When I went to Europe the first time, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago, and I noticed that if you're over 16, you could get you could purchase beer really easily, and they didn't card too much. When I went back, I guess a year later, they'd already toughened up the laws so that it's really hard to buy alcohol without being 18 and having an ID. At the same time, the U.S., or at least California, is also pushing to have our driver's license go back to 18. So I think it'd be a good yin and yang to kind of equalize it.
Yeah, it just makes sense for to get the binge drinking and all those problems out of the way before somebody gets behind the wheel. We grow up a little bit and get some understanding of what alcohol is really about before they get a driver's license and get behind the wheel.
I think pushing the driver's license back later is a really good thing, just for the environment, for a lot of things. I think the later you learn how to drive and the later you start depending on driving, the better off you get. And if you really want to cut down on teens killing themselves drinking and driving, then push back the license to 18.
Good idea. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
So, I have a question for the listeners. Do you think the situation would worsen? Did it worsen when you guys were young, or do you think is it a bit better nowadays? So for all you listeners, please call in. We'd like to hear from you.
It hasn't always been that the minimum drinking age has been 21. It'd be nice to hear from somebody who grew up where it wasn't illegal. Or somebody who grew up at that time.
What he was mentioning about Europe, one of my friends actually went to Europe this summer, and he said that he got drunk down there because, I guess the age limit of drinking is 16, so he had the opportunity of going, getting drunk, and he said that they were staying in a hotel, and he got stopped by the security in the entrance, and he was questioned and got in trouble and couldn't get out of his room for that whole night.
Really?
Yeah.
Funny. I was in Barcelona and I turned 18 a little bit before. Okay, I'll cut that short. We've got a call.
Caller, you're in the air?
Yeah.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on the drinking at 18. Perhaps you could get the statistics for how many lives would be saved by eliminating binge drinking or greatly reducing it if it dropped to 18, and how many deaths would then increase in terms of automobile accidents. And then if it came out that it saved lives, that would be an argument for it. If it came out that it didn't, you might want to reconsider your supporting it.
Those are two really important statistics that I don't think are really there. I don't think anybody really knows how many lives would be saved by not binge drinking. I know
There are a lot more traffic deaths than there are binge drinking.
Yeah,
deaths.
There are a lot of traffic deaths. The or the support for the drink, keeping the drinking age high. Their statistics are that the traffic fatalities have been cut by 13%, saving about 19,000 lives over the course of this law. And I know about 160 people had died, I think, this year from drinking themselves to death. So, but the other thing is the reduction in driving deaths is also, you could also credit that not just to the alcohol, not just to that law, but to increases in traffic safety and car manufacture and education and law enforcement.
They were also saying that in 2005, over 2,035 youth ages 15 to 20 were killed in alcohol-related traffic crashes, translating to 33% of all traffic fatalities in the age group.
Well, I'm hoping that we can reduce the number of teenage deaths from, you know, suicide and alcohol and driving, because, you know, they're at their prime. And I when I went to college, I was allowed to drink at 18, and I drank a bunch of beer and threw it up in the garden and said I'm fed up with that, and pretty much only drink half a glass of wine now and then.
Yeah.
But some people get into it and it never lets go of them.
Do you think the alcohol-related kind of situation, do you think it got worse or now, like in the years, than when you were young?
I don't think there were very many of my high school students in the late 50s and early 60s drinking. I know there were some, but I don't think it was a big deal.
Do you think it's like a big deal nowadays?
I really don't have any way of knowing nearly so well as you folks do.
Yeah, I'm gonna field that one. Yeah, it's a big deal now. Talking to my dad, who I think is about a similar age to you, there was a dip in popularity of alcohol around the late 50s and 60s. And during the 70s, there was a resurgence, which has held on till today. So I think that, you know, that's also something to consider. I don't think that that keeping alcohol with this elusive illegality really changes the how early socially people start drinking.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, let's figure out how many deaths it is either way. That in itself doesn't answer the question, because if you made it a major crime to smoke a cigarette, there'd probably be a reduction in cancer deaths, but we don't really want a society that's rigid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I don't really want to impose too much stuff on the youth. It just grieves me to see so many of them dying. And I would add, sometimes they run into innocent people.
Yeah,
they're not just taking their own lives.
Do you think it's up to the parents to kind of educate their kids of drinking responsibly if they do drink?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The best place to learn it. Who has more influence than the parents?
And studies prove that the parents are ultimately the person that influences their children the most.
Yeah, I never saw my parents more than social drink. I never saw them get plastered. So I guess I assumed that was the standard.
Yeah, well, thank you for your call. And
thank you for your show, and I'm really impressed with how articulate all the people on this show are. You're really good thinkers and speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good day.
Bye. But yeah, like, one of the things that I have noticed is that the parents do have the greater influence on their kids than anybody else. Even, like, the school fails in helping the students at times.
Yeah. But at the same time, if you're a parent and you are too strong against drinking, it'll push your kid to drink. You know, when you're a teenager, you're rebellious. You just want to do whatever you want to do. You know, whatever's going to push you, you know, to be cooler, to be more accepted or grown up or whatever.
No, and another thing that kind of intervenes is that the students are mostly at school, so they kind of listen to their friends a lot. And
yeah, your peer group's really important.
Yeah, like you're at school 8 hours a day, and it's like you go home and you only see your parents like a few minutes or something because you do your homework, or sometimes you just go out and like kind of have your you time, and like you don't really talk to your parents or communicate a lot with them. And maybe the loss of communication between your child and the parent is kind of also not good.
Yeah, I remember there was an age, when I stopped really, talking to my parents about things like alcohol and whatnot. There's, just a distance I kept from them, because they probably would have, I thought they would have just frowned on me drinking. And so, I kept them in the dark. And I think that if you made it legal, you would encourage more dialogue between kids and their parents, and that'd be good. If I talk to my parents about me drinking, and especially after getting arrested, it just made me just want to put it in check so much more. And I think that's true for a lot of people. If you talk to your mom about something, you're gonna feel kind of guilty.
Yeah. So the number is 456-9911. We would really like for you to come and join our conversation. So please call in. We would like to hear from you. I can't really, say, I can understand people who drink or anything, because I'm a non-drinker and non-smoker. And I was raised in a very strict family. And my parents, from the start, always told me not to drink or anything. But if I wanted to make a choice in drinking, then maybe I should drink responsibly. And I don't know why, but I have the tendency of learning from people's mistakes, and I watch what they do wrong, and I don't do it. And I think that many people who do drink should learn from the people who have lost lives, like in crashes and stuff. Like, maybe they should learn from that and maybe think twice before getting really, really drunk. And it's mostly drinking and stuff, it's all based on choices, and you have the say in whether you want to or not. It's like, you can't blame somebody but yourself, because you made the choice of drinking and driving, or
yeah.
So one of the other things is that
call, you're on the air.
Ah, hi. Thanks for this show. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
I'm an older person, and I never drank until I was 19, at which time it was legal in the state of Iowa.
Okay.
And it only took once getting drunk to know that I hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
Which I'm very fortunate for.
It's one of the three reactions. It's one of the three reactions you get to it, where you either love it, you hate it, or you'll do it again.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask your opinions on what I think is a great hypocrisy of our government.
And what is that?
Well, that supposedly you shouldn't drink and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, in our county, the sheriff signs off on exceptions to a law that says we have enough beer and wine outlets.
Yeah. I think it's a really big hypocrisy. I think it's one that that some people, I guess, feel maybe an investment in. I guess anybody that really loved Ronald Reagan, I hear his name every time somebody talks about this, keeping the drinking age 21. Maybe it's a point of national pride. Maybe it's a point of, the people that are older and are in power have as a grudge against the youth. I think, it's kind of insulting to be a person that's 18 and an adult, but is not, I guess, smart enough to drink or whatever.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why was it that you chose to drink at age 19?
Oh, because of the allure, what you're speaking about, the forbidden, it must be really great.
Yeah.
And I came also from a teetotaler family, so there was no alcohol in our home.
Mm.
And having been through that, I do think that if people drink, they definitely should model responsible drinking in front of their children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you grow up in a household where drinking is acceptable, but not taboo, not like with an alcoholic parent or two alcoholic parents. I think if drinking is modeled as something that is all right and can be done very responsibly and without incident. I think it's
in moderation.
Moderation is an important part of drinking.
Well, thanks. I just wanted to take advantage of this discussion because I teach school at Grace Hudson Elementary School in Ukiah.
Okay.
And we have a store 336 feet away from our school in the community center.
Yeah.
And because the previous sheriff signed, I call it an exception to the rule. It's actually called a memo of public necessity and convenience.
Yeah.
Which I find hypocritical right there, calling alcohol a necessity. But because the previous sheriff signed that, even though there's a state, the state has placed a moratorium on Mendocino County because we are already saturated with that type of alcohol license.
Of like a convenience store type liquor license?
Well, it's called a Type 20 license.
Type 20.
It's beer and wine to go.
Okay.
And so I think what I'm seeing, I'm sure it's not just Mendocino County, but I think sheriffs just do this just regularly. Just, oh, yeah, you want an exception? Sure.
It depends on the spot, but in Santa Barbara, or where I live, in Isla Vista, which is the community for the student population, it's maybe less than 20,000 people. It can be 16,000 people, and there's six full-service liquor stores, roughly.
Yeah.
So I think the exceptions to the rule are pretty easy to grant, but at the same time, if that same store sold to an underage buyer undercover, they would lose their liquor license. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about how strict Mendocino County is, and actually I'm kind of sure it's not, because I used to know people that would work for the county doing undercover buys, and I don't think it's that strong here, but in Santa Barbara they'll take your liquor license.
Well, I'll get off the phone and listen to you more on the air.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
I guess she does have a point there with the school and stuff. Because, I mean, Laytonville, like, they gave us the opportunity to go uptown and buy our lunch and stuff, and many of the students use that and go off and drink and smoke.
Yeah.
And sometimes they even ditch school, and, like, the parents don't even know that their kids are not in school.
I think that's, like, one of the controversies about high schools is whether they should have an open lunch or not. And Willits has an open lunch still. Ukiah High doesn't. And I'm glad I went to Willits High. I'm glad I got to go off campus.
Laneville has an open lunch school.
An open lunch, yeah. So, you know, it's nice to be able to get off and get what kind of food you want, to not have to eat cafeteria.
Well, I mean, like, if they also don't want the students to, like, go uptown, maybe they should give other schools, like, students a better, variety of foods instead of, like, giving us food from, like, what, last week or the day before that. And it's like, they should, like, give better food and foods that students will eat. Like, make the students say what they want to eat and then them decide, oh, that's healthy. Yeah, we want that.
The problem is that school lunches, to make them good, would cost so much money that isn't there. From being around food service and eating in a dorm, like... it's really bad food. It's garbage. It's the lowest grade meats. It's the lowest whatever. And they can't get more stuff because they don't have any money for it. And already I know Willits High is like freaking out about that their lunches are going to be 30 cents more expensive per student per meal, which really adds up. I mean, student lunches are really subsidized and still they're starting to get more expensive for students to eat.
Yeah.
And just to have that bad of food, it just is kind of like a punishment to make students stay on campus. But if when you do have an open campus, it's really easy to go off and cut out and smoke and drink during school hours.
Yeah. And also, like, some of the students that have actually, like, abused of that opportunity that have gotten in trouble and gotten caught, like, they still do. Like, they give them a second chance, say, okay, you can go uptown again, but this time just get food. And they still go uptown and get drunk. It's like you're not supposed to do that. It's like, you can't... Some people just don't learn the first time. They need, like, various times. Even sometimes they have to go to juvie, and then they still don't even learn their lesson.
Yeah, I think people continue to do something that's bad for them until... until there's something that's worse. You know, maybe it'll, you know, to take their first DUI conviction or something, and hopefully that's not what it takes. But people have got to learn some way, and if nobody else teaches them, they're going to learn the hard way.
Yeah. Caller, you're there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm, an older person, and when I was a teenager, I didn't have a sense of self, of who I was, and so I just wanted to fit in, to belong, and when I went to college and everyone was drinking, I drank, and I didn't really particularly like it, but I did in order to fit in, and then, you know, by the time I was 25 or 26 and I had a sense of self, I had stopped. But the other issue was that at that time when I was in college, there also wasn't anything else for to gather at other than bars or other drinking establishments where you dance, and I think that the same was true for other teenagers who weren't going to college. It's like that's the only place for teenagers and young people in their 20s to be. So I'm not sure what's out there now, but I'm hoping it's changed, that these aren't the only choices. And thinking of choices, you mentioned choices before. I think when we're young, we don't have a very well-developed sense of how to make choices when you're young. That takes experience. That takes years to be able to recognize how to make a choice, what the possible consequences might be in the future. And I know for myself, also I wasn't allowed to make choices as a kid. I wasn't even allowed to choose my own clothes or how I wanted to keep my hair. So suddenly I was 18 years old and I'm supposed to be making all these choices. So I think that's another issue is, you know, how many children are getting help in at home and at school and knowing how to make responsible choices in life, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could say that that's part of growing up is learning how to make choices. And I think people are being offered more choices at younger ages in terms of acceptable dress and whatnot. And I think this is just another choice that young people are having to make.
And I guess you have a point there that, because, I mean, I'm still trying to find myself, too. I'm only, like, 17 years old, and I'm still trying to find myself. But, yeah, like, sometimes I do try to fit in with others in my own school, and it's kind of really hard because you kind of tell yourself, yeah, I want to fit in, but then you ask yourself, like, is it really me? Like, who am I?
Well, I don't know what's going on in schools these days because I'm not, you know, I don't have a lot of young people in my life. But when I was growing up, there wasn't any emphasis on that in schools or at homes of trying to help us figure out who you were and to be true to who you were. And I think when you don't have a self, I should speak for myself, because I didn't have a sense of self of who I was, I was more prone to following things like that. It's like, oh, I want to, you know, I want to fit in. So everyone's drinking, and I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm going to hang up now and listen to your discussion on the air.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Okay,
well, that's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Rowan.
Yesenia.
And thanks to all our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with HALT, Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens. HALT is a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start program, and this project is creating many alternative activities for our teens in our community to keep them off the drink. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website at www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who expressed them. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of September, the 28th at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.